And we are on air for Fan Federation's NASCAR race review with Hot Topic Sound Off. And we'll start Hot Topics tonight at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Joining me for our race review segment is our co-host for tonight, Sal Sagala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Well, thank you, Sharon.
Yeah, really looking forward to this show here tonight. We're anticipating the racing at the L.A. Coliseum, and it's happened now. I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But before we do that, I'm going to give you an overview of tonight. We're going to give a few updates here on the ARCA, the Truck Series, and Xfinity Series. Just to make sure everybody knows when those next races are. We're going to talk about some short track racing and maybe a few other series, but we'll get some short track talk in here. And then, Sal, you were at the L.A. Coliseum, so we're going to give you a few minutes to talk about your experience there, and then we're going to talk, set up our guest that's coming on at 9 p.m. Eastern tonight, Tommy Mason, from MAV TV and Spears Racing TV. So we'll talk to Tommy Mason at the top of the hour, and then we'll take the last 15 minutes to talk about Big Clash at the Coliseum. Really excited about that race and can't wait to talk to you about it and do kind of a review of what happened there this weekend. 9:30, as I said before, is our Hot Topic Sound Off, and tonight we're going to have Jay Huseman, we'll have Andy Lasky, and Brian Everly is joining us tonight for our Hot Topics conversation, so that should be a fun conversation tonight as well. So with that, we'll get into the ARCA Menard series. The ARCA West and the Sioux Chief Showdown, their next event isn't until March 11th at Phoenix. So that's all I'm going to say about that because it's in March. I'm more concerned about those races that are coming up in the next few days, and that is the ARCA Menard Series and the ARCA East. ARCA East is going to be racing the Race to Stop Suicide 200 presented by Place of Hope at New Smyrna Speedway on February the 15th. The race starts at 7:40 p.m. Eastern Time at Flow Sport Racing. So we've been encouraging everybody to kind of invest in that. For just $12 and some change every month, you can get a whole lot of short track racing, including the ARCA East and West, at Flow Racing. So check out the app. It's available on Roku and all kinds of ways, so you definitely want to check that out. Also, the Lucas Oil 200, driven by General Tire, will be starting at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, February the 19th, at Daytona International Speedway, and that race will be broadcast on Fox Sports 1. So definitely mark your calendars for those races. They're do-not-miss events, right, Sal?
Oh, yes, definitely going to be, especially with the racing season getting started. You want to tune in and see what probably best option would be to play for Flow for the year. It's cheaper. I know it sounds kind of expensive, but if you want to see a lot of racing and all kinds of racing, actually Flow is the place you want to. You want to get a subscription for it right away.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, also the next race for the Truck Series is at Daytona International Speedway Friday, February the 18th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. That also is going to be televised on Fox Sports 1. And practice and qualifying is back, so they'll have a practice session on Thursday, qualifying on Friday starting at 3 p.m. Eastern. So that's noteworthy for everybody. Again, just wanting to make sure everybody's got the info. And then Beat, it's What's for Dinner 300 in the Xfinity Series at Daytona is Saturday, February 19th at 5 p.m. Eastern. They also have practice and qualifying on Friday practice on Friday, qualifying on Saturday, and again, it will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So mark your calendars now for those events. Again, these are the season openers for all three of NASCAR series, as well as the ARCA Menards series and the East. So super excited for that. But now, Sal, we want to get into some short track racing. And I believe in addition to being at the L.A. Coliseum, you were also at Irwindale this weekend. Is that right?
Yes, I was out there for the third annual Spears SRL Southwest Tour All-Star Showdown. This is a pickup from back when it used to be the Invitational All-Star Showdown back in when the track like first opened in early 2000. So, Puddleston brought brought it back, and this is the third one, and it was I'll tell you, it was one heck of a night of short track racing.
Yeah, they're kind of labeling it as the second All-Star Showdown. But Derek Thorne, who we had on our show on January the 24th, if you want to go back and listen to the podcast, he actually won that race. And it was quite a battle, I guess, between Preston Peltier and Derek Thorne, so.
Yes, it was until the halfway break, and then, I don't know, 15, 20 laps into the halfway break, Preston made a mistake and ended up in the wall and destroyed his car for the night. So Derek basically went and cruised on to his second showdown victory. He won the first one. Last year, Preston Peltier won it, and this year Derek won it. But it was setting up to be a really good battle at the end. There are some things that are being played out in the first half of the race. Derek and Preston, you know, are going back and forth, you know, and just set up a strategy, you know, on how they're going to finish. And unfortunately, it did play out that way. But I know a lot of the fans and you know, were hoping, you know, they it would have, because it was going to be, I'll tell you, it was going to be one heck of a great battle, you know, at the end. And, you know, it was two of the best, you know, two of the best short track racers, you know, from the West Coast were going to battle it out. And it was going to be a heck of a battle, but unfortunately it didn't happen that way.
Yes, and I know everybody was disappointed about that. And I know they have a lot of respect for each other, so it was really great racing, bumper to bumper and side to side and everything else. But just to kind of give you a feel for how important some of these short track races are, Derek Thorne was in this race, of course, but Jeremy Doss, you got Riley Earps was there. He's racing in the Xfinity Series
this year.
Yeah, in the Xfinity Series this year. And some other names that we hear a lot about. You've got Buddy Shepard was in that race. Dustin Ash, Preston Peltier, we talked about him. And Dylan Lupton. We're going to get Dylan back because I think he's going to be racing some trucks this year.
Yeah, he's got some stuff lined up. And then also Jake Finch from Phoenix Racing was also out there on this weekend racing. And it was kind of neat to see. You see the younger drivers, you know, that come from, the big money teams. And Jake spent a lot of – Derek pitted next door to Derek, and Jake spent a lot of time with Derek, you know, filling him out, you know, getting tips and stuff like that. And it's neat. It was really neat to see Derek take the time to talk to him, you know, not just, you know, he knew he was going to be racing against him, but, you know, still Derek, you know, took the time, you know, to talk with them, you know, and, you know, whatever they talked about, I don't know, because I was between them, but I'm sure a lot of it was how to get around the track. This was a new track for Jake, and, you know, and Derek was more than helpful, you know, as far as, you know, helping him, you know, giving him pointers and, you know, and he spent a lot of time with them. So it was neat to see, you know, Derek always giving back to the sport. You know, he loves to win, but you know what? He loves the competition, you know what? So it was really neat, you know, to see that camaraderie between the two, you know, between the, you know, the veteran driver and the up and coming driver.
Absolutely. I saw another familiar name in one of the short track races this weekend, the Icebreaker at Florence Motor Speedway. And guess who won that race?
I didn't even catch. And it's funny because I spent some time with Matt Weaver. He was at Irwindale, and I spent some time with him at the Clash. And I totally forgot to ask him how the Icebreaker went, because he's the one that, you know, that covers all this stuff.
Yes. Well, I'll tell you what, it was Josh Berry from the Xfinity Series. Florence Motor Speedway is in South Carolina, and it's part of the NASCAR Advanced Auto Parts Weekly Touring Series. And so the last time he won a race, the last time Josh Berry won a race at Florence Motor Speedway is when he earned his very first NASCAR Xfinity Series race a week later at Martinsville Speedway. So that's not good news for the competition with Josh Berry coming home with another win at Florence Motor Speedway this weekend in the Icebreaker. So that was pretty exciting to see as well.
Oh, yeah, Josh Berry is, he's a really tough competitor and, you know, a lot of respect. He's won a lot of races, you know, and he's really earned his way, you know, up the NASCAR ladder.
Right. This is an example of another one of those races that fans can watch on Flow Sport Racing, or Flow Racing, I should say, because they carry these kind of races every week, part of the NASCAR weekly touring series. So it's really kind of cool to see that, and to see that some of these stars from the Xfinity series, they're going to these short tracks when they're not racing, and it's really fun to see that.
Yes, it is, Sharon. It's awesome. I mean, there's... Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Sal, I hear you. I don't know what happened there. I heard you for a minute. Now I don't.
Yeah, I'm having technical difficulties with this phone. I'm having technical difficulties with my iPhone.
Okay.
I'm probably going to end up having to buy a new one as much as I don't want to.
Okay. So that was one of the races that I wanted to make sure we highlighted. NASCAR has a website, NASCAR.com. If you click on NASCAR Roots, you can find out what's happening in a lot of the series, the weekly touring series, the Arca Menards series, the Whelen Modified series, the Penske series, the Peak series in Mexico, and the Advanced Auto Parts. They have a lot of racing coverage that they have here. And if you're looking for the schedules, they have all the schedules that are up for the Whelen Euro Series and all the other series that I talked about. You definitely want to check that out so that you can stay up to date with everything that's going on in all of these series. I know Whelen Modified has a race coming up on at New Smyrna as part of that Asphalt World Series of Asphalt Racing on Saturday, February the 12th. So that's going to be a do-not-miss event. We talked about this a little bit with Jay. That Asphalt World Series, that World Series of Asphalt Racing at New Smyrna Speedway is huge. It's like 7 or 9 days of nonstop racing out there at that track, and it's really a huge event. So, and because it's so close to when things are happening at Daytona, some of the NASCAR Cup drivers, Xfinity Series drivers, Truck Series drivers, they all go out there and watch these races. So definitely check out that schedule and be a part of that.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were hoping for, you know, on Saturday, you know, at Irwindale, you know, is that some of the Cup drivers, you know, would have made the trip over there, you know, to see, you know, some of the racing. But I think with them ending so late, then you know, everything
true.
Else that went on, everything else that went on with their schedules, you know, their you know, they have their sponsorship, you know, things they have to take care of and stuff like that. So I think that's one of the reasons, you know, why we didn't see, you know, any of them, you know, stop on by.
Again, this is the New Smyrna Visitors Bureau 200, February the 12th. That's Saturday. And, again, it's going to be really huge. It's going to be available live on Flow Sport. There will be a tape delay on USA. It hasn't been announced exactly what time yet. But New Smyrna Speedway is a half-mile paved oval, and it's a lot of fun. That race starts at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. So just a preview of some exciting racing that's also coming up there.
Yeah, it's gonna be exciting. It's gonna be an exciting season, especially for I think a lot of our short tracks. You know, they're you know, vamping up. You know, sponsors are putting up, you know, more money, you know, to, you know, make the prize funds bigger. You know, and hopefully that'll also pick up the car counts a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And like I say, with all the racing that's taking place at New Smyrna that week, this is just one of the events that are happening. And you want to go to New Smyrna, newsmyrnaspeedway.org, and that's where you'll find out the complete schedule of everything that's happening throughout the week. And if you're anywhere near New Smyrna Speedway, you want to get out there to the racetrack during that week. Okay.
I'll tell you, it's a very nice facility.
Ahead,
it's a very nice facility. Sure. I went out there 1 year for the Governor's Cup, and it was really, really, I mean, I was really impressed with the track and everything.
Absolutely. Also, this isn't a short track, but I just want to point out a great article that they put out on the IMSA website. They're featuring a driver, AJ Muss, that went from being an Olympic snowboarder in the 2018 Winter Olympics to now he's an IMSA race car driver. So they do a nice feature on him. And I think fans will want to definitely tune in for that. But the next race for them is coming up in March, the Sebring race for the IMSA series as well. But go check out that article about the Olympic snowboarder that is now an IMSA race. I think for some interesting reading.
There you go. See, you never know who's going to jump over into our sport. You know,
exactly.
It's just amazing some of the things that are going on out there these days.
Absolutely. Now, Sal, you were at the LA Coliseum, the clash that took place at the LA Coliseum, and I really want to get your thoughts. Being out there, I listened to SiriusXM radio today, and it just seems like there were a few complaints about a few little things, but I will tell you, overwhelmingly, the response that I heard on SiriusXM was very, very positive.
Oh, yeah, I think NASCAR knocked it out of the park with this race. They went above and beyond, you know, what I think a lot of fans' expectations. I mean, a lot of fans expected it, but what really happened out there is really nothing that you could have really thought imaginable. I know a lot of people are saying it was going to be a wreck fest, it was going to be this, it was going to be that. And, you know, a lot of fans are saying this isn't racing and why are they doing this and that. But you know what? NASCAR went out of the box with this, and I'll tell you, this is the future, part of the future of NASCAR. I mean, there was a lot of good reviews from the fans. The drivers themselves liked it. Anytime you go to a race and they have to qualify, you see some big names that didn't make it. Kurt Busch, Eric Almirola, Brad Keselowski, you know, just to name a few, you know, did make the show, you know, and it was good. It was good that, you know, that they, you know, that they didn't make it, you know. I mean, and then you had other guys that made it. Corey LaHoy made it, you know. Cole Custer got in, you know.
Yes.
You know, the whole setup of just with the heat races, you know, the last chance qualifiers, you know what, it made for a good, you know, a good mix. And, you know, the drivers had to race, they had to race hard to get in. There was a time when Kevin Harvick wasn't even in, you know.
Yep.
You know, and then I guess Martin Truex was the only one that got the last provisional, or else he wouldn't have been in either. But
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, it was between the heat race and the last chance qualifier. It was exciting. The fans were yelling and screaming the whole time. It was loud, and you know what? And it was some good racing. I mean, you know, nobody got out of hand. There was no fights.
Mm-hmm.
The drivers drove hard. They pushed. They bumped.
Well, Ryan Blaney threw a
non-device,
I think, at one point.
Yeah, but, I mean, other than that, I mean, you know, wasn't, you know, everybody thought, you know, with the short track, it was going to be like Martinsville or like Bristol, you know, there's going to be fights after, you know, and it's just very well put on. Yeah, there are some things that I think they could seriously change.
Well, I tell you what, I don't do this very often, but today I did put out a tweet to Ben Kennedy. I think he was the driving force behind this, and it was out-of-the-box thinking. I really congratulated him on a job well done at the L.A. Coliseum. It's all been positive, and I think more out-of-the-box thinking is going to translate to some of the other racing venues that we go to, like the halftime entertainment, you know, the DJ that was entertaining fans throughout the day and everything. I thought it was a great success. But don't you see some of those things carrying over to other venues?
You know, I could kind of see it. The halftime thing, I doubt that'll happen at other venues, because the only reason they did was because they didn't have live pit stops. So basically they came in. And you know what? People that follow short track racing, you really got to look at the way that the format was set up. It was set up like short track racing. You know, they raced, half the race. They came in, they did a controlled pit stop, which is what they do at the Snowball Derby now. You know, they come in, you know, you come in, you know, whatever adjustments they allow, whether it be tires, fuel, you know, chassis adjustments, whatever, you know, then they give them so much time, 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you know, to do their adjustments. They blow a horn, they say, okay, and they let the drivers know, okay, you got 2 minutes, you got 1 minute, back to, you know, you got to be in your car ready to go. And then when you start the race back, you start where you came in, you know, so nobody loses a position.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have the pit crews over there, you know, trying to hurry up and rush, you know, and miss something, which is what we had at the All-Star Showdown on Saturday. We had a halfway break at 100 laps, you know, then we took a halfway break, you know, and you know, they came in and, you know, made all the adjustments with the SRL. Same thing at the Snowball Derby, you know. I think that was great, you know, and, you know, to see, you know, and then, you know, then they come out, you know, and they finish the race, you know. So, you know,
it was a nice mix of the old and the new, because you had grassroots racing, the brand new car.
Yeah, and that's how short tracks are run. They could have probably done away with the Ice Cube, you know, playing the concert, you know, while they, you know, I mean. You know, I've yet to see a track that has a concert. But then, like I said, they're thinking out of the box. You know what? What are the fans going to do?
Exactly.
You know, while we do these control pit stops, you know, hey, let's give them some music. You know, let's give them one of LA's, you know, own, you know, rap stars. You know, which was good. I mean, you know, I mean, it is what it is. But
it definitely was a different look for NASCAR. But at the same time, it brought back some of the tradition of that short track racing. I love that it was a nice blending of the new car the next generation car with the grassroots racing that fans have been craving for so long, the more of the traditional grassroots type racing. So I thought it was a great blend and a huge success.
Oh, yeah, the heat races and the LCQ race, I mean, that was icing on the cake right there, you know. You know, they went out, they qualified. If you didn't qualify, you know, then you went to your heat race. You know, if you didn't make it to the heat race, you know, you got an LCQ race, last chance qualifier. If you don't make it then, you're out. You know, don't matter who you are.
Yep.
You know, you're out.
Exactly,
you know,
and, right.
You know what? So you had to seriously race your way in. You know, it wasn't a, you know, Kurt Busch's new team, you know, we're going to, you know, he's going to get, one of 15 provisionals we're going to give out. No, we're going to have a set field. And this way you're going to qualify, this way you're going to get in, you know, and they stuck to it, you know. And, that's how short track
happy.
Racing.
Yeah,
oh,
even
yeah,
the
that's
driver
how short track
pretty
racing.
Happy. Okay, Sal,
yeah,
we're running out of time, so I got to move on here. But we will come back to the clash at the L.A. Coliseum once we do our interview with our guest. Let's talk about who our next guest is and what he does.
Our next guest is Tommy Mason. Actually, it's Tommy Mason and Jeffrey Best, but they're known around the country as low budget TV. I'm sure
it's
all
two
you short
people
track
sound?
Guys. Yeah, it's two people, but you know, they've been friends since they were. I think they were born friends. They're probably born in the same hospital.
So It's Tommy Mason, and who's the other gentleman that's coming on?
Oh, no, it's just going to be Tommy Mason coming on, but it's Jeffrey Best.
Oh, Jeffrey Best
so
is the other person that works with him. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the ones that got it started. Years and years ago when they were kids playing around at Saga Speedway with the microphone and a camera and, you know, and it bloomed into what they are today, which is low-budget TV, Spears Racing TV. Tommy works with MAV TV on some of their productions and stuff like that. It's really neat to see the transition they made from being kids running around
garage.
The track, the garage area, the pit area, to where they are now, you know, to be really respected, you know, on a lot of tracks. You know, they hire to come out. So, I mean, they do travel. They've been all over the country, you know, filming these races, you know. And it's funny because not this Sunday, just passed, not yesterday, but last Sunday we had a dinner and Tommy went to it. It was a luncheon for, like, you know, just one of the tire guys, Mikey Mulder. We've had him on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
He does a luncheon once a year around Christmas, and Tommy showed up, and I kind of threw the thing out of Tommy. I said, man, I said, pretty soon, I said, Flow TV is going to buy your production the way they bought everybody else out. You know, I said, so get ready for that seven-figure paycheck. I said, and when you get it, remember me. I'm one of your friends. We're going to have you on our show. And I said, so.
Well, this sounds like a real success story, Sal.
Oh,
you know, somebody.
You know what? Wait till you hear. Wait till you hear the story from him. Don't ever think that there is not a life as a kid. Then, I mean, their success story is Sharon. It is one of a kind. One of a kind. It's amazing. It's amazing what they do. It's amazing the production they put out. It's amazing when if you ever watch Spears TV and watch the racing. You've seen Tommy and Jeffrey, you know, in action. And to think how they started, where they started. They used to have a radio show that they would film. I think, I don't know if it was in Tommy's basement or if they did it at the track at Orangedale Speedway. But they had a one-speak radio show, too.
I'll tell you what, Sal. He's here. So why don't you go ahead and bring it. I've got him in the queue. He's ready to go and do the introductions, and let's hear the story. It sounds fascinating.
Oh, it is. And you know what? With that, you know what? Our next guest is Tommy Mason. I should have told him to bring Jeffrey. They both would have talked, but then we would need probably 2 or 3 hour show. you know, to get everything in. But I'll tell you, Low Budget TV, Spears Racing TV, MAV TV, traveling around the country, the way they started, I'll tell you, these amazing story. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, hey, good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, yeah, we had to have you on. I mean, even before we had talked, you know, last week, you know, about getting you on, you know, a couple weeks, I mean, your story is yours and Jeffrey's story is just amazing. Me and Cher were talking about it, and I talked to, you know, about a lot of people that I know, you know, and I mean, anytime you mention Tommy and Jeffrey, they automatically clicks Low Budget TV, Spears Racing TV, and I mean, your guys' story is just it's amazing from where you started to where you guys are at today.
Well, that's the fun thing is for those that don't know, it really started as a joke, and we can still argue it could be still today, but how it basically started was. I had a cheap video camera that I opened up as a Christmas present from my parents. This was in 2005, maybe 2006. So it's been over 15 years now. And I opened up this video camera, and while I was clearing out, you know, some junk in the living room in the bedroom of mine, I found a toy microphone, and that was the idea. I was like, wait a minute, we could do something here. And so we went out to Willow Springs on a regular track day. I think there might have been some sort of stock cars on the road course. And we went out there to pretend to be ESPN Speed World. And we took this fake microphone and recorded it with a cheap video camera and just wanted to see how the drivers would react. We didn't know anybody. They didn't know us. And they would answer our questions as if we were Bob Jenkins and Benny Parsons. They took it so serious, and we could not, you know, stop laughing about it. And so we then took it to our home track, Irwindale Speedway, which all the drivers do know who we were, and we knew them, and we did the exact same thing, and everybody thought it was great. Everybody loved it. And then from there, that's kind of where the snowball effect happens, right? So we go from having fun with it in the pit to then there's video opportunities up top at the track, and it just, again, snowballed into live streaming, into full production, and into television. So, but the main thing, and it always will be, and it'll never change, is the fun aspect. We started it as a fun project. And down the road, it'll end as a fun project. And, again, that's what it's all about, just us friends at the racetrack with our friends. So that's the most short version of the story that I can give you. But like Sal said, there could be hours of conversation of all the fun that we've had along the way.
You know, Tommy, I mean, it's, you know, like, you know, we're sharing, but, you know, really with the race fans, you know, is that, you know, in racing, you know, there's, you know, of course, you have the teams, you have the drivers, you got the crew, everybody does something. You got the photographers, you got the riders, but you got the video people, you know. I mean, but what you and Jeffrey have done with you know, with the Low Budget TV moniker, you know, Low Budget, you know, which is how you guys have always operated, you know. But even through the transition from, you know, all the different tracks you guys have been to, you guys have always stayed humble, and you guys have always stayed close to your roots. You know, you guys never forget.
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
that's key to us. Yeah, and that's absolute key, because we want to, we love developing and growing, but there's always home, and we'll never forget where we came from and how it started. And you heard me talking about friends and friendship and whatnot, and that's, you know, our TV crew per se. So when we go hit the road with Southwest Tour and whatnot, even heck, we can go across country and we're still bringing our friends. And it's not because we don't want anybody else inside of our circle. It's just because we're too cheap to pay the good the people to help us. So our friends, thankfully, are all race fans, and so we jump on a plane, or we jump in a rental van, or we jump into my car, and we load stuff up in the trunk, and we go to the racetrack, whether it's, you know, 30 minutes away or across country. So, and we have a lot of fun doing it. Again, you hear that word a lot. And humble. Yeah, very humble to know, you know, in 15 or so years, none of this was planned. Absolutely not. It was literally just start with that toy microphone and cheap camera, and it just, again, we just evolved into this thing where we didn't know what we were doing, and we're still figuring it out, but it's evolved, and it's gone bigger and crazier than we'd have ever expected to. And I don't know where the bus stops, but if it doesn't, we're along for the ride. We're race fans. That's another thing too, is what people hopefully see out of the project that we have is we're not going there for any other reason than we would have already been there anyway. So it just happens that we have a camera with us, and we're going to provide some entertainment and capture moments, you know, capture memories for some of these racing people. So it's not like we wouldn't be at Kern or Indianapolis Speedrome or Evergreen Speedway or wherever we're going to be at. We were going to be there. It just, we happened to evolve into race fans with a camera.
You know, and then when you think about it, Tommy, I mean, Arundel's been blessed, to be a part of, your guys' growth, and, not only your growth, but, everything that has gone on, behind the scenes with Low Budget TV. You know, I was telling Sharon, you guys used to have that little radio show, the video show, on the internet, and I can't remember if it was you guys. I think you guys did it at Arundel, or did you guys do it in somebody's basement?
Oh yeah. No, that was a lot of fun. That was like way a long time ago before technology was easy to use like it is today. We were literally using an old desktop a friend gave us that they were going to throw away. We plugged in a camera somehow. I can't even tell you what cable we used, but it somehow worked. And yeah, we would record these live talk shows, and it was just basically us sitting in front of a camera, Jeffrey and I going over results, and then I'd pull out my cell phone and we'd put them on speakerphone and interview them. And I mean, I would love to go back. It's a website that doesn't exist, unfortunately, so we weren't smart enough at that time to know how to record what we were doing, and it's all stuff you don't think about, but now you wish you can look back and just cringe at some of the stuff that we were probably doing, but yeah, those are a lot of fun. So we actually, in the office at Irwindale Speedway, we would hijack the internet and broadcast, and then eventually it came to Jeffrey's garage. We did it in the garage and unfolded a fold-up table and tripod there, and we had people coming by. Like, people would figure out the address somehow. Who knows what they were doing, but and we had racers stop by every now and then, which was, again, crazy to think about. But yeah, that was a lot of fun, and I do wish there was a way to pull that out. But again, the wonderful internet, sometimes as things change, things go away. So
and with that, Tommy, you know what? I'm going to hand it over to Sharon. I know she has some questions for you, too.
Tommy, your story is so inspirational. I hope there's some kids that are listening to hear how you took something that you got for Christmas and the toy that was laying around and what you did with that. It is pretty fantastic. And, how timely is this? It's like you were destined to do this, because streaming is kind of where it's at these days. I know I've dropped my cable, and I'm all streaming now on Roku, and I love it. I'm not paying as much as I was paying with the cable bill. But what fans have always been craving is this grassroots racing, and they can't always get out of the track for whatever reason. You're bringing the track to them.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it as far as how the timeline all worked out, because anybody could tell you now, or if they haven't yet, like the technology, and you can see this in your living room, you can see this in your car, you can see this through internet broadcasting. The technology today, anybody can do what we're doing. And there's websites that can sell it, and it's not anywhere near the price that it used to be back when. But, you know, there is that years and years of experience. So you've got to really hone your craft. You've got to really make yourself different from the others. And we started way back when in 2006. And again, we didn't know what we were doing. And that's how it works, right? You just kind of evolve, mm-hmm. and it works or it doesn't. You try again next week. You try again next week. Just like the actual racers and the race teams at the racetrack. You're going to come in there with possibly a good setup and it fails. You might go in there with a hope and a prayer and you nail it. And so as technology is evolving, I mean, YouTube, Facebook, all these things now, you can stream from your cell phone. And that wasn't the way back then, 15 years ago, or even 10 years ago, or even 3 years ago. So as technology continues to grow, you know, it is amazing to see what this could come out to. And I think, you know, all these big companies above us that have all this technology, they're gonna find it's eventually going to, I feel like, be what you said, cutting the cable, and people are gonna just mm-hmm. be streaming everything. You see, I mean, how many times have you seen people watching stuff even on their phone? You couldn't have done that 10 years ago. So technology is changing, yep. and we just got in at the right time. It's not planned in that way.
And what I love about this story, you talk about the trials and the tribulations, the successes and the let's try this again. It's your passion. You've heard the saying, nobody has to work as long as they're doing what they love. And that's what this sounds
yeah.
like. It sounds like you had a passion for this, and it's what kept driving you through all of the successes or the failures. The, you know, that didn't work, so let's try something different. I love it. It's so inspirational, and a big kudos to you and Jeffrey for everything that you've accomplished with this. And you know, I live in the Midwest. I'm from Illinois. So I'm able to watch Spears TV and see what's going on with the SRL races. So, you know, that was unheard of not that long ago. And you brought that technology and made it available so that somebody like me could see what was going on out there in the West Coast.
Yeah, and I thank you for watching. It's a lot of fun to bring those races to you because you talk about passion, right? So Jeffrey and I, our parents met at the racetrack, sitting in turn four at Sauga Speedway in Santa Clarita, California. And that friendship that developed into Jeffrey and I being best friends, and then in turn developing this low-budget TV, Spears Racing TV project, and, you know, who knows how it's going to continue down the road. So we were friends before we even knew we were friends. If that makes any sense, I'll try to explain it. So we would be at the racetrack, and we would know that one of the two of us were going to be there, right? And we'd get to the track, and, hey, there we are. And we would just go run around under the grandstands and kick rocks and trash. And, you know, then we'd go to Mesa Marin and Bakersfield and kick the trash at the bottom of the grandstands, go run in the pits, get autographs, and pretend to wave flags like we were flagmen. And then I think that's when we realized, wow, we're not that far from each other. We can hang out, you know, during summer breaks and, you know, school holidays. And, you know, we, you know, developed this, you know, best friendship. But And that's kind of, again, how this project really all started, with a bunch of friends, mainly us two, and then it developed into, you know, more and more people coming in, and, you know, you get to know this contact, and you talk about, like, we see Sal every race, and we make sure to catch up on life and chat a little bit as much as we can while we're in passing of doing our stuff. You never know with racing, and it's such a big world, but at the same time, such a small world.
Okay. Sal, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and close it up because we're on our time schedule here. But, Tommy, we've got to have you come back again. This was a fantastic conversation. And I hope our listeners found it as inspirational as we did. I'd love for you to come back. How can fans follow you? Because I know you're on MAV TV. You help out with MAV TV as well, the low-budget TV, Spears TV. How can they keep up with you and what's going on?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And the best way to keep up to what we're doing is through social media, low-budget TV on Facebook, and then LBTV Racing on Instagram and Twitter. I have a page that I don't know if I have enough space for friends. I think Facebook has a thing that if I accept any more people that, you know, it'll warn me or something. I don't care. Just come enjoy what we're all doing, and we'll be happy to have people follow.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight. We really enjoyed this, and thank you for being willing to come back again somewhere down the road here. Kind of educate us on how this whole TV streaming thing kind of started with you guys, yourself and Jeffrey, Tommy Mason and Jeffrey. I can't think of his last name right now.
Jeffrey Best.
Yep.
There you go. So, you know, that you guys, you know, developed a friendship and developed your passion at the same time. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. We'll talk to you all later.
All right, thanks for coming on,
Take
Tommy.
Bye.
All right. You're right, Sal. We could have talked forever with Tommy.
Oh, yeah.
That was fantastic.
It is an interesting story. I mean, that wasn't even probably an eighth of it.
Yeah, I know.
That was just the surface right there. That was just an introduction.
Exactly. We'll have to make him a regular on the show here somehow. But we do want to get into the clash at the Coliseum because that was history in the making for NASCAR. And this Busch Light clash at the Coliseum has been a huge success, taking place this Sunday, February the 6th, at the L.A. Coliseum. Joey Logano held off Kyle Busch and was able to come home with that victory when it was all said and done. Kyle Busch didn't make it easy on him, though. He was pretty hard charging. Joey Logano got the lead on lap 116 just moments before Kyle Larson kind of retaliated against Justin Haley for an earlier contact. That actually it wasn't anything that had to do with Haley. Haley was hit from behind, and that pushed his car into Kyle. But unfortunately, Kyle took it out on Justin Haley and took him out of the race. Joey Logano won that race. Kyle Busch came in second, followed by Austin Dillon, Eric Jones, Kyle Larson, William Byron, Cole Custer, Christopher Bell, A.J. Allmendinger, and Kevin Harvick came home with a top 10 finish. There were 5 lead changes among 3 drivers and 6 cautions. The average speed of the race was 39.029 miles per hour. Joey Logano is one of 24 different drivers to win the Busch Light Clash from 79 to 22. It's the second Busch Light victory. Busch Light Clash victory. He also won in 2017 at Daytona. He becomes the 12th different driver to win multiple Clash races, and it was Team Penske's fifth Clash victory. It's also the 10th time that Ford has won the Busch Light Clash. Kyle Busch, who finished second and runner-up, he did it. He's done that twice in the Busch Clash. He also did that in 2017, as well as this year. It was an exciting event. Your thoughts about that top 10 and kind of some of the things that I highlighted there?
Yeah, you know, it was, gosh, I, you know, it's just really hard to put into words, you know, what was witnessed down there this past weekend. But I'll tell you, when Kyle Busch was making a run at Joey, then he ended up hitting the wall. We're sitting up in the peristyle waiting, you know, for the end of the race. And Kyle was starting to make a run, and then he hit the wall twice, the backstretch wall, you know, which kind of, you know, kind of slowed him down, you know, from making any move from there. But I'll tell you, he was on it. I mean, he was ready to, you know, any mistake by Joey. And then, of course, the lap traffic, you know, came and, you know, played havoc on all of it. But, you know, it was neat, you know, to see, you know, see Cole Custer, you know, get that seventh place finish. You know what? Chris Bell get the eighth place finish. You know what? Eric Jones get the fourth place finish. You know what?
This is what I loved about it, Sal. There's more parity in those cars, and we're seeing names that we don't normally see in that top 10. And other names that you would expect to be up there, they're not in the race, or, you know, it's just a whole game changer.
You know, you would talk with Cole, you know, I talked with him before the start of the race. I seen him in the garage area, you know, I said, well, you made it. He goes, yeah. I go, what a difference, you know, getting practice, you know, and doing some qualifying, you know, finally getting some seat time, you know, especially on nobody knew this track. You know, this is a new track. So it's not like you have guys like Kevin Harvick or Kyle Busch or Joey Logano, that have raced this track, you know, many, many times, you know, it was a new track, you know, just with, you know, the practice, you know, it helped. I mean, and, you know, it was a really good race. I mean, you know,
and
I know a lot of people had Kyle.
They took a lot more of a beating without cutting down a tire. They were sturdier, if you will.
Oh, yeah. They were bumping. I mean, I have pictures of guys that were just flat out running up the back of another driver, you know, and the cars were – they were really sturdy, you know. And, of course, you know, the odds-on favorite was probably Kyle Larson to win, you know, with his dirt track experience. But, you know, it was, you know, to see Daniel Suarez, you know, make the show, you know, was really, you know, something special.
Yes.
You know, especially in that community right there, around there. There's a lot of Hispanics, you know, around the L.A. area.
Yep.
You know, and you know,
Daniel's
so, you know, it's nice to see. Oh, yeah, and it was nice to see, you know, Harvick, or not Harvick, but Suarez. We talked to him a little bit before the race, me and Manny and us, you know, and you know, he was excited, you know, he had made the, you know, race. All the drivers were, you know what, and like I said, you know, it was nice to see, you know, that not every big name driver made it. I felt bad that Brad didn't make it. I really want to see Brad. He had a really nice hot rod. His hot rod was beautiful.
Yeah, that was amazing. And
you know,
Daniel talked about how it had a hometown feel to him.
Oh, yeah. The crowd was diverse. I'll tell you that. The crowd wasn't just one nationality. The crowd was, it was mixed. And I'll tell you, there was a lot of partying going on. It was crowded. It was hard to walk to get from one side of the track to the other.
You could tell people were having a good time.
Oh, they were, and it was loud. They were loud, cheering and screaming, and the cars were loud. And oh man, I had to wear earplugs where I was at because that's how loud it was inside that Coliseum Bowl. But it was, I guess they're planning on having it there again next year, possibly 2023, possibly 2024.
Yeah, that would be really cool. You know, I kind of feel like when I walk into Indianapolis Motor Speedway, there's a certain aura that surrounds that track that kind of gives you a little goosebumps, if you will. And, you know, there were a couple moments in that event where I had that feeling. But, Sal, you were there walking into the Coliseum for a NASCAR race. Did you get that sense that there was an aura there and get that goosebumpy feeling?
You know what? It kind of did to a sense, because I'll tell you, I've been to the Coliseum, I don't know, numerous times. When the Raiders played, when they were in town, that was their home field. And me being a Raider fan, I don't know, 20, 30 Raider games I went to, concerts, been a I don't even count the number of concerts. Mickey Thompson off road show over there. But,
yeah,
man, when, you know, I'll tell you, I was beat Saturday. I was going to tap out and I'd even go on Sunday. I mean, I'd walked already almost 50,000 steps between Irwindale Friday and Saturday. Saturday was hard. I was the only photographer there, so I had to do everything. And I was tired, and I had to wait late for them to, for Ricky to pass tech. And I got home. I told Sandy, I go, you know what? I go, I'm beat. I go, I don't know if I'm going to make it tomorrow. I went up with Will Lester. I know. I went up with Will Lester, so I was going to text Will and say, you know what, dude, I'm – but then I know if I text him, he's going to call me a slacker, and I was going to get all kinds of names thrown at me. So
right.
I woke up Sunday morning, and I know. And then I know I heard it from you guys. But then,
yeah.
You know, but I always say that. I always say I'm not going to make it, and then I always go. But so then I woke up Sunday, got showered, got dressed. Yeah, probably was, not by chance, but – but I got up and went, and then, you know, we got there, we walked in, and, you know, walking through the press box and, you know, getting our seats, you know, then, you know, going out to the track, and of course, you know, then the adrenaline started flowing, and you can and then
mm-hmm.
see the fans, you know,
you
excited they were.
You
and, oh, yeah, and I mean, you can just feel, I mean, the energy, I didn't even eat.
Oh, wow.
That's how energetic I got. And usually I always stop and grab something. They fed us. NASCAR fed us. And I didn't even, and
yes.
I grabbed a couple bottles of water and went out to the track, and that was it. It was hot and I didn't care, but you know what? I went through the stands and seen some, you know, old friends and stuff, talked to them, you know, and you know, found my place where I was going to shoot the race. And I'll tell you, and I was kind of sad that it was over when the checker flag flew. As tired as I was sitting on the peristyle waiting for Joey to come up the steps, and as tired as I was, man, I was kind of bummed out that it was over. But
actually,
was,
I think that's one of the times that I saw you at the top of the steps when Joey Logano was walking up.
Yeah, that's where I got a bunch of text messages and pictures on my phone. Hey, we see you
mm-hmm.
on TV. What are you doing up there? And you know, and man, I said, you know what? How come your camera's not pointing at? Well, I have a long lens. I wanted to catch it when he came up. But
yeah.
And then,
well, we're coming up to our last less than a minute here. We're down to 30 seconds. So are you going to be at a racetrack this weekend, Phil?
No, this weekend's Super Bowl.
Oh, that's right, Super Bowl this weekend. Okay,
yeah,
we'll catch up with
weekend.
You. I think our next show is actually not until the 21st because they've got the Olympic break here, the Super Bowl break. But, yeah, we're going to do a podcast preview, but the next review show will be on Monday, February the 21st. So we'll be thinking about who our guests are going to be for that show and get that all lined up. But, Sal, thanks for all that you did this weekend. We really appreciated it. I even used one of your photos today on the website. So you did a nice
cool.
job.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks. Everybody have a good weekend. Go, whoever your Super Bowl favorites are, I'm not going to tell you who mine is. But whoever you pick, I hope your team wins. If
oh,
not,
I know who
well,
your favorite
you know what,
is.
There's always next season. So, anyways, you guys have a good show. You guys have a good week. Stay safe. Watch out for the COVID. He's out there. And we'll talk to you guys in a couple weeks when we come back. Bye.
Oh, okay, Sal. Take care now. Bye-bye. All right, that was Sal Sagala, Jr., and Sal has is coming down from being at the L.A. Coliseum this past weekend for the Clash at the Coliseum. He was also at Irwindale Speedway for the showdown there, and he's had a very busy weekend, and we appreciate what he did there. But now it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off, and joining us for that tonight is, first of all, our Hot Topics co-host, Andy Lasky. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thanks, Sharon. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Looking forward to our conversation here tonight. We also have Jay Huseman, the co-host for the preview show on Thursdays. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. And I just want to say it's so great to hear somebody else talk about something. Sal mentioned it. He said he was so excited and involved in the race, he forgot to eat. When people ask me that, they're like, you know, did you eat while you were at the track? And I was like, no, I forgot. I didn't go to the bathroom. I forgot. I was that intense and excited. To hear somebody else say they go through that, it made me feel good. I'm like, I'm not the only one.
Absolutely not. Okay, also, I am so excited that returning back with our Fan for Racing crew this year is Brian Eberle, and he's part of our Hot Topic panel tonight. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon, how's it going?
It's going great. We've got a lot to talk about on our NASCAR Hot Topic. I think I've shared with you what our process is here, and I'm going to go to you for our first Hot Topic here tonight.
All right, we'll get it started. First, I just want to expound upon what Jay said there. Those are the best days at the track when you're covering a race and the day ends and it's 11, 12 o'clock at night, you're leaving the track and you're like, man, I'm hungry. I didn't really eat anything this afternoon. So those are when you know it was a great race and there was a lot going on and a lot to cover. And I guess overall, I just kind of want to kick it off with getting everybody's thoughts on the Clash and what they thought of yesterday, what they liked, maybe if there was anything they didn't like, and just kind of get their overall impressions on what we saw yesterday.
Okay. Andy? We'll go to you for the first commentary there.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I said that a couple, three times in our race day chat yesterday. I was thrilled. I thought it was a home run on NASCAR's part to be able to put together an event like that, a temporary event, in fact. I mean, I believe they've already began to deconstruct the racetrack, but I think that this opens some doors for down the road. A lot of excitement surrounding this event yesterday, certainly. It put on a great show, and I think what was fun about it is it's non-traditional from our normal race format. We had heat races to set the lineup. We had a lot of teams that had to go through your last chance qualifiers, and we didn't really know who was going to be in that race until the bitter end of those races. And then, of course, the main event. And it wasn't terribly long, so it retained its excitement level, I thought, quite well throughout the event. And I watched the entire coverage from 2 p.m. through about 8, so that's 6 hours, and it went really quickly because you had everything broken up from qualifying races to the last chance qualifiers to the main event. And so it was a lot of really good short track racing. It got pretty wild there actually late afternoon for those last chance qualifiers. It was just a lot of fun. And I think this opens up some doors down the road because this was something that strayed significantly, I think, from what we're used to in the sport. And you may see new temporary venues. You may see NASCAR move in a direction where it can set up these new venues in new markets or possibly visit existing bullring type short tracks that are already out there. The point being that this may allow NASCAR to expand its locations and go to various places. You know, maybe not necessarily every year, but allow them to maybe rotate these types of venues, not just in the United States, but possibly internationally. It's already been discussed and possibly rumored for down the road. So, but just a really cool format. I thought the venue was great. I liked the fact that it was a new market, or I should say a market revisited Los Angeles from the past. The production was good. I had read possibly some negativity about the broadcast. I liked the broadcast. I thought it was good. They pulled out, you know, all stops as far as entertainment was concerned for those who attended the event yesterday. I don't have anything negative to say about it. I thought it was a really cool event, and I thought it was a really good direction for the Clash. Personally, going into it, I had questioned myself whether I would miss the Clash being held at Daytona, but it was either to Jay or Mike yesterday in the race day chat that, you know, this kind of set the Clash aside and separate from Daytona Speed Weeks and being its own unique event, whereas the previous Clash was more or less an extension of Daytona Speed Weeks and almost felt more like a Daytona 500 practice session that would usually end as a demolition derby, which provided entertainment value. But I think that this is a very positive change that now sets the Busch Clash completely separate from anything else that the Cup Series does, and just truly enjoyable. And I look forward to seeing more of these types of events in the future.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, there's a lot to cover on this as a topic. One thing I want to say when it comes to the venue or doing this in other locations, I think what we need to do is a separate hot topic, especially when it comes to the cost, as Mike and I discussed earlier. So I'm going to set that aside. There are some good and bad, as with most things. There's always good and bad. And first off, I want to focus on the good. And overall, it was great. I thought it was awesome. Brought in a new market, Andy mentioned, new fans. It was an event, without a doubt, that it was definitely an event, and it brought some attention. You know, and I chatted with a lot of dirt fans, and they're going to put their spin on it, which I'll get to on the other side, but they were at least watching it. So all great things. The debut of the new car came with it. I think we saw some great things from that. Again, some concerns. I won't say bad or negative, but some concerns that Evolution will have to work through. Come back to those on the second round. But, yeah, the great thing, and Andy mentioned it, the Clash had, for some teams at Daytona, become a test session for the 500. We saw that in years past. I think this really separated that. It being open and you having to work your way in. We saw some the top drivers not make it in. Okay, that's kind of a concern, and you know, whether or not then it holds fans, but it also highlighted some new drivers, other drivers that did, and I think that's the good thing to take, because, again, it brings a fan base to those of, hey, who is this guy? He showed up and went toe-to-toe with the big boys, ran really good. I think that's how Justin Haley put it. So that's a great thing to see that mixture, to see, like I said, the performance of the car. Yeah, you can still wreck one of these cars. They are not indestructible. We saw that and we knew that. But there was a little more flexibility, and we didn't see the sheet metal bend up and cut a tire or that create a team from dropping out. So great thing there from the car, first time out. Some of it, this track specifically, was going to put a lot more wear and tear on it. It was the first race with it. So take that for what it is. And I just think it really set a great tone for the season, and I mentioned of a new market, new eyes, and hopefully that grows the sport. So I'll end there and let Brian jump in here, being that he brought the topic up, and then come back around to maybe some of the concerns and things to look at on the road.
Well, I'm going to jump in there first.
Yeah, don't leave Sharon.
You forgot me.
Sorry.
Okay. I kind of with Andy and with Jay, there were a lot of good things, and I absolutely loved it. I watched it on the TV, so I wasn't at the venue. But I loved a couple of my observations. Is I felt like I've been asking for grassroots racing for such a long time, and NASCAR was able to do that with this temporary short track, which seems kind of impossible to do, but they did it, and they did it very, very well. they brought this short track to the L.A. Coliseum and marquee venue, and with a brand new car. So you had this blending of trying to capture some of that grassroots racing with a brand new car in NASCAR, and I thought it blended very, very well. I like that the cars are a little sturdier. We're not getting cautions for those cut tires that you mentioned. I thought that was fantastic. They're not indestructible, to Jay's point. They can still be destroyed. We did see some tempers a little bit on the track. So there was the passion there from the drivers on the track, and that's what short track racing is. That's a lot of it. Is the passion of the drivers on the track, and we saw that. We saw some growing pains. This is something new. It's out-of-the-box thinking, and we did see a little bit of growing pains with it. We're going to see some growing pains with it, and I think the growing pains are going to happen on the track, but they're also going to happen behind the scenes. I listened to Travis Geisler from Team Penske today on SiriusXM, and he was talking about how they have to kind of reshape their thinking about how they deal with the cars. He was talking about how, you know, they usually have to strip the whole car down and rebuild, and he said they're basically going to keep the inside of the chassis together, and it's just adding, you know, everything to the outside or making the changes there. And with these being snap-on parts, more or less, you don't even have to change the whole car. You just have to snap on the parts that are damaged in some way. Obviously, there's going to be different cars for different types of tracks, and they'll deal with that. This is probably going to be most closely related to like a Bristol or a Martinsville. I do think some of the growing pains that they experienced are people making adjustments to the new car. In Tyler Reddick's case, I thought he said he punched the clutch a little bit too much or too hard, and he thinks that's what precipitated his problem. Chase Briscoe mentioned that he was shifting a lot more than a lot of the other drivers were doing, and that might have contributed to the issue that he had. So there's going to be those kind of growing pains through all of this, and I think we have to go into that with our eyes wide open with that. But overall, I agree with you guys. I think that it was really, really good racing. People looked like they were having a great time. And talk about carrying this over into other out-of-the-box thinking ideas. I know we can't do a halftime, but before the race, entertaining the fans with the DJ that they had, the LA DJ that was there and spinning tunes and, having fun with the fans. Everybody was having a really, really good time. And it wasn't just the fans in the stands. It was the announcers. It was the drivers. The drivers were a little more tempered, if you will, because they didn't know what to expect on the track. But I think overall they had a good time as well. So I thought it was a home run for NASCAR. And, Brian, I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
A lot of the same thoughts you guys had. I mean, first off, I just can't get over the visuals of that racetrack inside the Coliseum. Like, I'm so jealous of everyone that got to be there and experience it in person just from watching so many – all the TV coverage I could over the weekend, the different videos that people had posted, the photos from various media members and a couple of friends I had at the race. Like, just incredible looking, you know, and – like a lot of people, when it was first announced, I wasn't against it ever, but I was kind of skeptical of that's not really going to work. How are they going to build a track in there? It's not going to be a good race potentially, you know, but I was all for trying it, especially with it being an exhibition race like the Clash. And to me, it exceeded expectations. I think it was overall a really good race. I mean, as much as I wanted Busch to kind of run down Logano there at the end and kind of have a side-by-side battle for the win, I think the racing was pretty solid, especially on that size of track. I absolutely loved the heat race format. I mean, I wrote an article yesterday. I can't remember the last time qualifying actually truly meant something outside of, you know, maybe a guy or two not making it in the duels and making the Daytona 500, but those have never been the big names for several years either. So you had four playoff drivers from last year didn't make the feature event, and you could tell, you know, when they talked to Kurt Busch and Alex Bowman, they were definitely disappointed. It meant something to still make the feature. I mean, I don't want that qualifying format in every race weekend that we have, but I think it's great for an exhibition like this. It'd be great for the All-Star race. You know, we can get in more to where we could see this going in the future too, but I just think, like, it was great for the Clash. I'd love to see something like that for an All-Star event. Just kind of curious as to what other venues might work and how you make it as cost-effective as possible, because obviously we've heard the numbers of it definitely wasn't cheap to build a racetrack out there, but I think with all the buzz that it generated, hopefully new eyes that tuned in or that went to the race, because to me that's always been the thing, going to my first race in 1999 at Michigan is what really kind of hooked me as a fan. So I think getting people there any way you can and hoping that they decide to come back to a race or tune in on TV, I think is, you know, all you can hope for. But I really don't think it could have went better for NASCAR yesterday, honestly. I mean, that was a big risk. There's so many things that could have went wrong or, you know, could have really blown things up. I mean, I've still seen, you know, on social media, there's of course some people that don't like it or didn't enjoy it. But to me, I think that's perfect for an exhibition event to start off the season. And it definitely created buzz. And I thought it was a pretty solid race. I was entertained. Like, it was, yeah, like one of you mentioned, 6 hours of coverage yesterday, but it never felt long or drawn out or boring to me. So overall, entertained. Kudos to NASCAR and everyone that went into work on that event, because it obviously took a lot of work. It was definitely a gamble, and I'm glad that it seemed to pay it off in a very positive manner.
Okay. Andy, it's your follow-up time.
Yeah, and something that Jay first touched on, and you as well, Sharon, we talk about some of the durability issues. It should be noted that short tracks can be some of the toughest on equipment. That's always been the case. And, you know, we have to consider, too, with a brand-new car, with parts that haven't been truly proven just yet, I think that we're going to see growing pains to start the season, and it may take several weeks for manufacturers and NASCAR and these teams to really figure out, you know, any durability issues with parts or you know, any potential issues the car may have. We're going to go to a variety of racetracks to start the season. And, you know, just coming off a short track here, we've got a super speedway, intermediate tracks. You know, you've really got quite a diverse start to the season, which should help, I think, everyone figure out these durability issues. I think it may be a bit of a storyline to start the year, and I'm sure this is going to come up again during speed weeks at Daytona, but I think that's just part of it. It's a completely brand new car with completely brand new parts, and it should also be noted that the majority of this car is built by outside vendors from the team, so a lot of these teams don't really even have control over, you know, their own parts and pieces that would have otherwise gone into the race car, and they're now at the mercy of vendors taking care of these parts and pieces. So it's going to be interesting to see how everyone reacts to this. And I think that we saw a couple driveline problems yesterday, probably just the start of potential issues we may see. I don't think it'll be a huge problem, but it will be a factor to start the year and may have some implications as far as teams that, you know, may have been in contention to win a race that may not win a race in light of a potential mechanical problem. But, you know, I chalk that up to growing pains that will ultimately be worked through, and I think that we'll get through it. But, you know, definitely something that, you know, came up yesterday, and specifically for drivelines, when you think about short tracks and shifting and all that, that's about as tough as it can possibly get on these cars. But, you know, something that we'll certainly, I think, see as the season unfolds, as, you know, everybody in the industry learns this car and learns what it can and can't do.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, as we're talking about concerns, and I'd say Andy stole my thunder, but it was actually going to be Mike's thunder. That is one of the concerns, I'll use the word concerns, that he brought up. And we look back at the history of when NASCAR mandated everybody use the provided pit gun. There were some issues there, as well as then the Halmar engine in the truck series. That the teams don't have control of that. And that is a slight concern to me as well. We mentioned it, you know, some of there were some different things, different track, different things, different drivers were doing on that. The positive I take from it and the outlook is they'll learn what they can and can't do, push it to its limit, find out where the limit is and go from there. As well as then hopefully take that to the manufacturers, being that it's not within the team. Hopefully then they take that in a positive way to the ones that are producing the parts and say, hey, we need this to be more durable or this could be changed and done differently. Rather than doing it internally, provide it for the whole sport, not just their own team. I understand everybody's looking at their own team first, and that's why we have the competitiveness we do. The other thing that I have a little bit of concern with is NASCAR is still about racing. I understand the mixture, and I know when we had talked about this on a previous show, I'm not tuning in for whoever the music show is or the entertainment. I appreciate the providing it because it does bring new fans as well as provide a total package. I just hope that NASCAR doesn't go too far in making it more of a show than a race, finding a balance. Same thing with the fact that it was on the quarter mile of short track, or doing the qualifying and heat races, that they don't go too far overboard. And I go back to, we thought about it or talk about it with night races. Everybody wanted night races. Then when they went to night races, there were too many of them. Then they wanted road courses. We got that now. Now they want short track. You know, NASCAR has to keep it, and I think they do a great job of it, of yes, you want to keep the fans happy. Yes, you want to keep the drivers happy. Finding that balance, you know. So I just hope they don't go overboard, overextend themselves, and that would lead into when we talk about doing it at different venues and different markets and other areas. And like I said, I think that's kind of a separate hot topic if we can get to a next round or so. But the other concern, and I'm really torn on this, when you talk about top drivers not making the race. I've always been in favor of, you know, the one provisional was fine. And again, that's a separate hot topic on that decision, but of if a top driver doesn't make the field, I'm okay with that as long as they are still eligible for the playoffs, because that means throughout the season, I'm going to watch to see if they overcome it. We go back to Sharon and I have both agreed on this. Kyle Busch probably became a more popular driver when he was out the first 15 races of 2015, I believe. Maybe I got numbers wrong there. 11 races.
11 races.
Anyway, there we go, in 2015. Happened to come back. I mean, there were fans that weren't Kyle Busch fans that were watching and actually wanting him to get in, and, you know, because he had to overcome that. And that's what this provides. You know, if this were a points race and affected the full season, guys like Brad Keselowski, yeah, they're starting in that hole, but then it's the overcoming. And then, like I said earlier, to me the positive is if there is that gap of they didn't make the field, who did and how did they do? You know, everybody was so thrilled with Michael McDowell winning the Daytona 500. That's the opposite side. You know, you have that story, and you don't get that if you eliminate them because this guy's locked in. So there can be a positive from it, but I understand it's a concern, especially when it comes to, and I always pick on Chase Elliott. He's most popular driver, but, you know, how many fans are going to then say, I'm not watching because Chase Elliott's not in it, or whatever it be. So I think those were the two biggest concerns. And again, the car, some of that I do think that this being a new event, new track, a short track, which, yeah, obviously is tough on equipment. Overall, again, I thought they performed very well. Putting these drivers, I think Brian kind of mentioned it on the worry going into it, just as we did with the Bristol Dirt. Is it going to be just a demolition derby wreck fest? And it wasn't. We had a stretch in one of the last chance qualifiers, but if you understand that, you know that is last opportunity. I mean, that you're either in or out. So that second one there, we had a stretch where that one got a little hairy. I think we had one green lap to every five caution laps. So that's bound to happen. But I thought they did a great job in handling it. And then just like with the Bristol Dirt Race, they learned, NASCAR learned from it. They made some adjustments. You know, we'll see that from the drivers, from NASCAR, from the crews, to adapt and evolve. They're at the top level for a reason. So long term, I see the outcome being good.
Absolutely. I do see the overall outcome being a very positive thing. I, like you, don't want it to be like, oh, man, we really, really, really like this. And now we're trying to get into every Coliseum around the country. So, I don't think NASCAR is going to do that. I think they see the value in submission event. At least I hope that's the case. We'll soon find out. Because they are talking about possibly internationally. But I think for NASCAR, Brian's right. They deserve the kudos that they're getting. They did a wonderful job of pulling together a fantastic venue, a fantastic entertainment package to go along with the NASCAR racing with a brand new car. There was a lot of energy that was wrapped up in the Coliseum on Sunday, and everybody thoroughly enjoyed it. I guess we're going to talk about different venues later on, but I know fans do want to see it. You've got an all-star race that's coming up. I know it's at Texas Motor Speedway this year, but we'll have to see what they come up with as this new venue. But a lot of people are thinking about it. And NASCAR is going to have to space that out. But what I also see is, and Brian, you know we've heard this, they talked about street racing in Chicago, and I look at that and say, there's no way they're going to be able to do street racing in Chicago on Lakeshore Drive. They have to close it down. And how would you watch that? And blah, you know, all kinds of things come to your mind. But a lot of people said that about the Coliseum, too. And they did a fantastic job with it. So if anybody could make that happen, I guess it would be NASCAR. But we'll have to wait and see if that comes to light as well. I'm excited about it, and you guys brought up some great concerns, and there's reason for those concerns. But I think overall I'm very enthusiastic. So, Brian, your final thoughts?
Yeah, I mean,
on
I
this
think
topic.
I kind of have a little bit of the same concerns just on some of the equipment failures that we saw. It's going to be expected, obviously, with a new car and everything they've gone through, and I don't think it's, you know, it wasn't so widespread where I think it's concerning at this point. Just be something to kind of keep an eye on as the season goes on. I'm sure, you know, obviously these parts come from common suppliers and are distributed, you know, equally amongst the teams. But if you've got, you know, one driver that has a couple equipment failures early on, there'll be, you know, your conspiracy theorists out there and stuff like that and all that stuff to get people talking. So hopefully it doesn't get to the point where we see a lot of equipment failures early on. I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about at this point, but it is definitely something to kind of note from yesterday on the negative side. I also did, you know, see there were some fans that were upset that their driver didn't make the feature. But to me, you still got to see him race in a 25-lap heat race and a 50-lap last-chance qualifier, so it's not like they weren't on the track at all. And to me, that kind of just adds the excitement. If that's my driver, like, man, I gotta watch this to see if he makes the feature. Darn, he didn't. Okay. And I also feel like we're at the point where a lot of fans have, yeah, maybe their favorite driver, but they've got a second or third driver, whether it's a teammate or, you know, someone else in the same manufacturer or this and that, where it's not the end of the world to a lot of people, I feel like, these days. But I could be wrong on that. But I definitely don't know that I want to see that qualifying format everywhere by any means. But it'd be kind of neat to still do that and have that mean something, especially for these exhibition races, and then look at what it means. Obviously, if someone misses a race, you wouldn't want them missing the playoffs when you have that format that, you know, they'd have to kind of tweak how they do all that down the road. But I definitely like that. I definitely think the format was great. Hopefully they can kind of do something like that for the All-Star race and hopefully something like that for the Clash again next year. I think we're probably all in agreement on this panel. We're fine at not going back to Daytona, just a matter of where we may want to see it go down the road.
Okay. So thanks for bringing that up, Brian. Andy, you're up next for the next topic.
Oh, this is kind of an interesting one, and it's going to be interesting to get opinions on this because it involves the 19 of Truex yesterday. And I know Jay and I kind of touched on this a little bit during the race day chat, but the team took advantage of a rule for the event, which basically allowed them to skip the last chance qualifier and just go straight to the main event by virtue of their points position from last year, which I have to give a lot of credit to the crew chief and the team for figuring that out, but it made me scratch my head a little bit how they could just skip the qualifying race and go straight to the main, kind of a loophole, if you will. So curious what you guys thought about that. I think it raised a lot of eyebrows yesterday.
Okay, Jay, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, this is a tough one, and as you know, as I've expressed, coming from the dirt track background, which this was kind of formatted off of, you have that possibility when you're providing a provisional. Normally for a series that with my experience, the driver is required to come out and turn a lap. They can't just sit out. They do have to come out and turn a lap. Now, again, you pull off to the side, let everybody pass you. You do your one lap, you pull off the track. Okay, is it the best sportsmanlike? That debate, you could go hours and hours. As I was thinking about this, and I'm one that when it first announced, I wasn't particularly fond of it. It is still a risk versus reward, and here's where I think long-term different things come into play. The value of it, they protected their car. They did have to start at the back, so there's a risk. They have to start at the back, and especially on that quarter-mile track, how many laps was it before he was going to get passed or be in danger of being passed depending on how he was running? So you run that risk, as well as being behind where we generally say majority of the stuff's going to happen is mid-pack versus trying to work his way up to the front. But it locked himself in. And I put this message to remind myself in the notes yesterday. Think back to Jimmy Johnson on the Roval a few years back. He went for the win, and it cost him a playoff spot. The race win would have given him, a guaranteed spot and moved him on. But by doing so, it cost him because he ended up finishing back far enough where he didn't make the playoffs. So it's a risk versus reward. Was there anything wrong and illegal about it? No. Am I a big fan of it? No. And one thing that I always talk about when it comes to football, the kneel down. I personally do not like the kneel down play in football. With your head or just not ready to take a shot at the end zone or whatever, I don't like it. But there is nothing wrong with it. And I know all of us here, we've talked about it, Talladega, riding around in the back, okay? And Mike brought up the 100% rule, And, yeah, the way that rule is worded, it's vague and NASCAR has a subjection to it. But if your 100% is to win that race, you feel your best chance you're winning that race. First off, is to guarantee be locked in. You're giving it 100%. You're locking yourself in. So that is giving 100% in order to win that race because you're guaranteeing a locked-in spot. So I can't really fault them. Whether I agree with it or not, I can't fault them for making that decision. Do I like it? Do I think they should have to run? Yes. But, it is what it is. And they chose to go that route. They ended up 15th. Could he have worked his way in and started better and then not gotten in the back? Don't know. That's going to be a track-by-track, race-by-race situation that they got to make on. And from what I heard, Martin Truex wasn't the one that made that call, that he wanted to race. I think it was his crew chief that talked him into it or made the decision. So I'll protect Truex a little bit.
Okay, Brian, your thoughts?
I agree. The competitor in me would have loved to see him go out there and run the race. At the same time, if I'm the one making that call, hey, let's be smart about it. Our goal is to win the Clash, not to win the last chance qualifier. We got to start last, but I mean, looking at how that second last chance qualifier went, that Truex would have been in, it definitely looks like a smart call in hindsight. When it was first made, I was kind of like, whoa, well, that kind of sucks. But at the same time, like you guys kind of said, even if you change the rules of, okay, you got to start the race or run the race, there's nothing to really prevent them from going out there and running a lap and parking it or, running several laps down. I think from my standpoint, I was just surprised. I kind of thought they'd want the laps with it just being the next gen car and just trying to get as much you know, seat time as you possibly can, that they'd go out there and at least run it, even if they, you know, ran it half a lap behind the field or whatever to stay out of a wreck. So I was a little bit surprised by that. But, again, that's the rules, the rule book, and if you're going to play it by the rules, I think it was a smart call by Truex's crew chief for sure. If I'm a Truex fan, yeah, I'm a little disappointed maybe, but also, again, at the same time, I realize, hey, that was a smart call because we kept our car in one piece and we made the feature, which was ultimately the goal of the day. But, yeah, I'd like to see them kind of change that provisional around somehow. I don't know how I'd do it yet, but, like, do something a little bit different to make it not so, you know, easy, I guess, to kind of circumvent having to go out there and run.
Okay. I can kind of see both sides of this topic, and I'm not sure exactly where I stand. I didn't like it when Jimmy Johnson rolled in the back during the All-Star races and stuff like that, and some of the venues, but he played the strategy to go after the win, and that's what he was doing. But I hated it for his fans because I felt like his fans came to the track to watch him race, and they didn't get to see that. They were kind of cheated out of that opportunity to see him actually race the race. But I also think, you know, if you look at Kyle Larson, who had the other professional, he did race, and there were a couple times where he almost took himself out and might not have been in the clash itself as a result. So I think that and some of that was maybe of his own doing, but there was a couple of situations where it wasn't of his own doing, and that's a whole other topic. But I do think, and I was disappointed because, you guys know, I'm a fan of Martin Truex Jr. I really like him, and I would have loved to have seen him out there on the track racing during those heat races. But I also see some value in his crew chief making the decision that he made, because you can't be in the race. They were struggling with that car, and it gave Martin Truex a chance, and we saw a lot of drivers doing this when it wasn't their heat race. We saw drivers watching what was going on the track, and it gave Martin Truex a chance to kind of take that step back and be able to look and see what other drivers were doing and what lines they were taking, and maybe give him a chance to maybe drive his car differently. Martin Truex is a talented driver. We all know that. But it gave him a chance to look at it from a different point of view, so that when he got back in the car, one thing I did notice is he was able to kind of make up some of the positions. He sort of the price he had to pay for using that provisional to get into the clash was that he had to start at the back. So he had to race his way through. And he even said, I don't see myself getting up to first or second. So he paid that price as well. But I was able to see him kind of make some progress with that seat time and move up in position. So, and that was for the main feature. And all of these guys were racing for that $1.9 million that was the purse. So this was nothing to sneeze at. And there was a significant reason for why these drivers all wanted to get in to that race. So in a way, I got to give James Small, a little bit of credit, kudos for making the decision that was going to get his driver into that final race. And you never know what can happen in these things. And there's a chance that Truex maybe could have. But I think realistically, he knew he wasn't going to be up there racing for first or second. It was going to be hard work trying to work his way through that field. So, yeah, it's a tough one. Maybe NASCAR will look at just one provisional and not two for the future. But Kyle Larson didn't have any problem getting in there and scrapping it up with the guys in those heat races. So there's two sides to the coin and different ways to look at this, I guess. So, Andy, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I will admit when this first happened yesterday, I was a bit frustrated by it. However, you know, if you really look at it, a brilliant call by James Small, I think. to utilize the rule set forth, which was the highest finisher in 2021 Cup Series points that was not already locked into the main event would get the provisional to proceed to the main event. And that's the position they were in. They were the highest team not locked in, and therefore they took advantage of the provisional. And I think we have to look at the fact that these teams are in short supply of chassis and cars that are fully built and ready to race. And with this new car being as versatile as it is widely expected that a lot of these clash cars are going to be Daytona 500 backup cars, because there isn't really any differentiation now between a super speedway, an intermediate or a short track or road course car. They can all in theory be raced everywhere. So, and with teams only having one to two cars built, I think the importance of trying to take care of your car was paramount. Now, if you looked at that couple of those last chance qualifiers, you wouldn't think so. But I think that for many of these teams to simply come out of this race with, you know, an intact race car was probably mission accomplished. And then, you know, if you are following the rules set forth for this race and you can eliminate a chance of destroying a race car by taking advantage of a provisional and simply moving your way to the main event, mission accomplished, right? If you're that 19 crew chief. So it's also a special event. This isn't something we normally see. Special events have special rules. And, you know, I think that I wouldn't mind seeing some tweaking done on this. I think that, you know, all you'd have to do is maybe simply say that, you know, everyone's going to run the last chance qualifier, but whoever, you know, whoever finishes the highest or, you know, or highest, I mean, I guess it wouldn't matter either way, because whether Truex ran last or ran first, you know, if he's the highest in points from the previous season, he still advances, which would defeat the purpose of even running the race. But I'd at least like to see them have to run the event, even if they're not maybe out there rooting and gouging and being super aggressive, you know. So maybe they can tweak on it. You know, maybe they just eliminate that particular provisional and say that if you're a Cup Series champion from last year, you can proceed, like they did with Larson, who coincidentally did race his way in his own qualifying race. But it was one of the rules that was set forth. It should also be noted that the Clash has never been open to everybody or open for everybody to make their way in like it was this year. Generally speaking, it was only for pole sitters and other criteria, you know, which generally meant the field would be about 20 cars. You know, and we can liken this particular scenario to Truex met a criteria in which he was the highest in points from the previous season, which allowed him to take that provisional. So it simply is one of the criteria set forth that allowed Martin Truex Jr. and that team to proceed their way to the main event. So it's a special event. It's an exhibition race. It has no bearing, of course, on the championship or point standings for this year. So, you know, I was a little frustrated at first, but when you really look at it, it really isn't that bothersome to me. It's just one of the rules set forth for the event, and they took advantage of it. And like I said, I think when you consider, you know, the necessity to try to take care of these cars, at least to start the year when cars are in short supply, it was a really, really brilliant move by the crew chief to do that. So, you know, like I said, can they maybe tweak on this a little bit and make it so everyone's going to run that last chance qualifier? Sure. I wouldn't mind seeing that for the future, but ultimately it was simply a team being smart enough to utilize and take advantage of the rules that were set forth by NASCAR. And, you know, ultimately, I don't think it had any impact on you know, that last chance qualifier or the main event itself. So it's kind of one of those situations that, you know, nobody did anything wrong, and I don't think it had any effect on anything, really.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up?
I think the key hit on there at this point anyway, this was a one-time thing. the Coliseum, the first time out, you want your all-stars in. Everybody wants to chase Elliott, call up in your camp from last year. So that's how they set it that way. If this were a long-term thing, so throughout the season, when we go back years back, when the provisionals and what they had to call the champions provisional, and I hate it, but the or Daryl Walker, but as well as Richard, that you can, there's several ways to tweak it. You can limit it to X number throughout the year. You can limit it to once you use your one, you can't use another one until somebody, other drivers that need it have, or you can put it as a random draw. That's a possibility. We put in, I think it was in the All-Star race when they do the fan, they still have to finish on the lap. So you had to go out and run the race. If you won that didn't were eligible, you had to have run the race. So there are some different ways. And with this being an exhibition race, I'm this product on, and Martin Truex or whoever it have been, whether it be Kyle Larson, top star that were the champions from last year, obviously were the top last year. You want them in it. So the design of the rule, good. When you talk about, though, even saying half and telling them they have to run the race, like I said, under 100% rule, that is so hard to monitor. And one of the things that popped in my head, if somebody wants to get real technical about it, when you talk about a race where you're saving fuel, are you really giving 100% then? You're protecting your fuel status to make sure you can go the laps. Or somebody that's not passing somebody but on their bumper, instead of passing them, they're pushing them, making them drive harder and hopefully we're extending their car mistake. Where do you draw that line of giving 100%? So that is a really tough thing, and I know Mike is really anti that rule. And the way it's written, it would be tough to, I could pick out any driver and say at some point they're not giving 100%. With the exception, I guess, maybe Ty Dillon or Kyle Larson, like you said, they definitely gave 100%, no doubt. But unless you see that, how do you know they are? At some point, again, if you're following somebody, watching their line for a lap or two to pick where then you want to try and pass them in a couple laps, is that giving 100%? It is so tough. So that rule kind of goes out the window, because unless it is clearly blatant, and I think that rule came into play when drivers weren't going out for qualifying, when we were doing the group qualifying or time session, sandbagging, we've seen it in the past. And again, they are not breaking the rule. They are just taking advantage of the rule that's there. So can you blame them for that? No, not really. I mean, that's, it's a tough call to make. But in the event that this becomes a long-term thing, if they run this same event next year, okay, Truex is the one that's not eligible next year because he used it this year. I mean, that's one aspect to look at it. So hopefully they do find a way to improve upon it. For this event, as a whole, whether I liked it or not, I don't have a problem with them having that option, whether I like it or not.
Okay, Brian, your follow-up.
Yeah, so are we going with a new topic now, or?
No, this is your follow-up on the same topic.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of agree. I'd like to see some sort of tweak to it. I kind of like Jay's idea of, okay, maybe you used it last year in the All-Star or for the Clash, you don't get it this year for the Clash. So, something like that. Just, again, it's an exhibition, so just play around with it, have some fun with it, see what we can come up with. Overall, I think would be kind of cool. But, I mean, ultimately, I think it worked out like it needed to. It allowed Truex to be in. It gave that opportunity for if a bigger name had trouble, they'd still be in. You hate to see last year's champion Larson not be in, but I think it gave that little bit of safety, but I'd also be fine if there was just no provisional at all and they just ran the guys that made it in and went with that.
Okay, I'll be quick here as well. I just think that this was a one-off situation, and, that a brand-new car, the next-gen car, And let's face it, this was a practice session for all the drivers to get a chance to have seat time in that car under race conditions. And, you know, it was a chance for NASCAR to see what happens under race conditions. So I really think this was a one-off thing. The other thing that I think is important to point out here, and I do like this part of racing as well, strategy is part of racing. So what Gene Small did was a strategy play that was fully within the rules that NASCAR put out there. So if we expect these guys to strategize how they can win. This was a strategy, I think, that had a different end result, but I do think that strategy was all part of the decision-making process. So, and it is part of racing, and that's all I'm going to say then. And I will say we've only got about 9 minutes left in the rest of the segment here. Oh, Andy, you've got a chance. Let's get your follow-up comments, and then I'll say what I was going to say.
I don't really have any on this one, Sharon. I think I pretty well covered that, so I think we're good to move on.
Okay. Now, first of all, I want to do a check-in with Brian. And, Brian, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but sometimes we do go overtime, and it's part of the bonus material on our podcast. But if I ask you for 1 hour tonight. If you can't stay beyond the 1 hour, I certainly understand it.
Nope, I'm good.
Okay. So we're coming up. We can bring up another topic, but it is going to go into that bonus overtime area. And I might as well make the announcement now. For anybody who's tuning in for the first time tonight, it's important that you understand that we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. But we do continue recording our conversation beyond that time, and it's available on our podcast. I'll go out on Twitter to let you know that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can go to the two-hour mark on the podcast, amforacing.com, and hear the rest of that conversation. And I guess for podcast listeners, they'll be able to listen straight through. But for those that tuned in for the live broadcast tonight, I just don't want you to think that we're leaving you up in the air as we continue talking and we go off air midstream. So we do that announcement at this time. So, Jay, it's your turn to bring up this next hot topic. So what do you have for us?
All right. Well, we've kind of touched upon it and even some opinions given already of I think I listed it. It says, I got it from Twitter, the success of the Coliseum race in L.A. could lead to events in other cities. Sharon, when you posted it today, it came from Jayski talking about, they're already talking about the possibility of, I think international has come up. It could lead to international. That's what's on Jayski. So we've all said it was a success. And real quick here, before we get into it, where was Mike's thoughts on that? Which one was that on? It was on there somewhere. Mike did have, what's that?
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, Mike did throw some numbers out there. They said, and this is real rough math, they said on the broadcast, you know, it cost over $1 million to do the track. They said about 50,000 in attendance. Mike threw $70 per ticket out there as a number. Comes up with a 2.5, so that's 3.5 million. With the cost of the track and the purse was 3 million. That leaves you 500,000. So that's somewhere in that range is what we're looking at. So the cost of it, the profit of it, yes, it was a good event. Can NASCAR do it again? And then us, obviously, overseas is a whole nother cost level. But what we think about that and whether they should or how to go about it, what are the thoughts on that of it being somewhere else every year, every couple of years, or what other venues?
Okay. Brian, you're first up this time.
You know, I love the idea of it kind of rotating around to different venues. One thing I was thinking as I was watching is what other venues would it even fit well in? To me, looking at the Coliseum, it seems longer than a lot of, like, football-type stadiums. So I don't know how big a track you can fit in other football stadiums. I know in media availabilities last week, a couple drivers mentioned they'd love to see it maybe at AT&T Stadium down in Dallas. I know Joey Logano said prior to the race last week during his media availability that, you know, if this was successful, you know, pick all this up and go put it down somewhere else. We'd love to see that happen. I think it'd be great to feature different parts of the country, different big cities, different stadiums. I obviously, as a Chicago resident, I'd love to see him come back and race inside Soldier Field like back in the day. Don't know if that even be possible, but that would sure be a really cool visual down there along the lake. Obviously, couldn't do it in February, but you know, so it wouldn't necessarily work for the Clash, but maybe for like an all-star race type event. I do think it opens up just a lot of possibilities, you know, for me. I know they want to expand internationally as well, but to me, there's so many great places here in the U.S. to still try to go and race. I also wouldn't mind seeing doing some things where they come in and they maybe race at a iconic short track, and instead of spending $1 million to build a track, they're dumping $1 million in to improve the track and the facilities for a long time to come. I think that could go a long way in really kind of helping the short tracks out and helping out, you know, local economies and things like that as well. So I think it opens up a ton of possibility now that it went off very well. And I think you'll probably get a lot of other people that saw that and they're like, huh, we never thought that would work before. Well, maybe it will work. So I'm sure Ben Kennedy and NASCAR executive phones have been lighting up with calls and texts already. I'd love to hear kind of other possibilities that they've got on their mind and you know, potentials. But I mean, I think it definitely opens up a lot of different opportunities. It's just a matter of kind of, is it cost effective? Does it make sense? And kind of how you do it. And at the same time, it kind of talked about earlier, don't overdo it. Like they went 7 road courses. I don't know if they need quite that many road courses. I don't want to see 3 or 4 stadium events. It loses the uniqueness. To me, it'd be awesome to have that be the Clash, have that be the all-star race, and that's it. They do 2 type things like that every year. I think would be really cool for exhibition events. So that's kind of my overall take on it anyway.
So you're advocating for more domestic events versus international?
I think so. I mean, I know there's a big need to go international, but like to me, I don't know. I think continue growing it here in the U.S. and go from there. But I know there's always that big taste to grow internationally. I mean, that's the same thing with, you know, the company that I work at. Like that's our goal too, to grow internationally and get that market. So I think ultimately they could do that. But again, I mean, they did that back in the day with going to Japan for an exhibition. Like that didn't really kind of work and pan out. And if you want to talk about costs, packing up all that equipment to transport it overseas is definitely going to be a huge increased cost that I just don't know that you want to put on the teams at this point. Again, without knowing the financials behind it, maybe they will get a return on investment doing something like that. But it just seems like a pretty huge, substantial cost that doesn't need to be undertaken at this point.
Okay, Andy.
You know, I'm a little torn on this one because I don't think it's a bad idea to consider expanding outside the U.S., maybe occasionally, but I don't think I'd want it to be a focal point. NASCAR isn't the Formula One. Formula One, of course, is an international racing series that races all over the world. NASCAR is a stock car series based in the United States. And I think that the sport has done well to branch outside of the Southeast where it was born to all parts of the U.S., and I think we certainly have room to grow there. And that's probably where the focus should be. You know, there's a lot of markets within the United States that could stand to see some growth, such as, you know, up where you live, up in the Midwest, Sharon, and maybe the Pacific Northwest. So I think that I'd prefer to see growth within the United States first before we see too much of a branch out. But, you know, we should mention that NASCAR has already worked on international expansion. Remember that the Xfinity Series raced in Mexico City for a short time as well as Montreal. And I think those were popular events. Why that series didn't continue to race there, I'm not sure. I wouldn't mind seeing the Cup Series maybe return to Mexico or Canada, you know, in at least a limited capacity. But I don't know if I would want to see it expand much beyond that. And I think the Cup Series ran some exhibition races, at least two of them over in Japan in the late 90s. So it's not like this hasn't been done before, but I think that we've got a lot of room for growth within the United States to focus on first before we go too deep into any international racing. And then I wanted to touch upon the use of venues. I think that what they did at the Coliseum this weekend certainly opens doors for building new venues or potentially temporary venues. But I also think that there are a lot of short tracks that could be utilized. And I think one of the things I would love to see possibly is the Clash be run on a track that doesn't run the rest of the year, such as what they did out at the Coliseum, like a North Wilkesboro, a Bowman Gray Stadium, I think would be a fantastic place to do it, which is really the same as what we just saw this past weekend. So there's some existing racetracks that I think would put on a fantastic show for the Clash that maybe we could visit as well in the future. But I think at the bottom line, or I should say what the bottom line is, and at the end of the day, it would be nice to see the Clash rotated to new markets and new venues. You know, and I think that there's plenty of places that they can go that exist as current everyday racetracks, and there may be the potential to build new venues within existing stadiums or arenas. But it would be fun to see the Clash rotated and brought to new markets and new venues each year. And, you know, it could be made into a special event like what we just saw. You know, but I think if we moved in that direction, certainly it would help keep the interest and the allure of the event alive while catering to different markets. It's kind of like, you know, the Super Bowl, which the NFL, of course, has to determine its championship, which, of course, everyone knows that. But, you know, that's rotated to different venues each year. You know, why couldn't we see the Clash, you know, unofficially kick off the NASCAR season in different markets and different venues each year? So that's the direction I'd like to see it head. Whether that comes to fruition or not remains to be seen, but it would be fun to see see the Clash rotated around and, you know, possibly come to some place close to where we all live.
Yeah, I have to agree with you guys. I'm more in favor of them keeping it in the U.S. as opposed to going internationally, even though international could be Canada or Mexico. I'd really rather see them invest that money domestically. I think there are a lot of opportunities. We saw some out-of-the-box thinking with what happened at the L.A. Coliseum. I think that they should continue the out-of-the-box thinking with the Clash, with the All-Star Race, and some of the exhibition races that they're talking about. Maybe it was a short track this time. Maybe it could be that street race. Maybe, you know, I don't know what other out-of-the-box thinking there could be here. But I'd like to see them continue some out-of-the-box thinking as it relates to the Clash. And this fit just so perfectly with the next-gen car, with addressing the outcry from fans for grassroots-type racing on the short track. They wanted to see more short tracks on the schedule, and giving the drivers a chance to test that new car in racing conditions on a short track. I think it fits the bill, and it was out-of-the-box thinking. And that's what I think I'm looking for NASCAR to do going forward, continue that out-of-the-box thinking, make it unique, make it something that fans are going to look forward to if they tune in for nothing else than to just see what happens, because they just can't believe that they could put a racetrack inside the Coliseum and as a temporary track at that and make it work, and yet they did. So if they can continue that, I think that's going to be the key to this thing. And, of course, they've got to look at the return on investment, too, and I agree with Brian. If you're starting to talk about sending race teams international, that's going to make a huge dent in the cost of doing business. And so I just think it makes more sense to keep it here in the U.S. So that's all that I really have to add to that. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, let's start with as a fan. Yeah, I'd like to see him race somewhere different every week, every twice a week on a weeknight. I'd like to see him run. I know I've thrown it out there, the enduro or not enduro, but a mixture like the 24 hours of Daytona. Put the trucks, the Xfinity and Cup, all on the same track at the same time. There's a lot of things as a fan I would like to see, but then you have to come back and look at it from an intelligent aspect, like Mike. Well, okay, maybe intelligence isn't the right word. A thinker. Ah, that's not right either. A realist. No, you know, he's got a point. There are logistics involved. There is cost. When you talk about the 3 years they did the trip to Japan, okay, and for overseas, normally you're looking for, just like anything else, a multi-year commitment. There's a heavy cost with that. We just talked about the cost even doing it at L.A., Now, I like what Brian said of there is tracks that are already there that they could invest that same $1 million in. I know I heard a lot of people, I don't know if I'd say fans, but people talking about, well, what about North Wilkesboro? Why not put money into something we already have? That's fine and dandy, but you get that same outcome. North Wilkesboro is a small town, small facility. Are you going to get the same return then of the $2.5 million coming in from the track as you did in LA? Are you going to get the same type of exposure and new eyes, which is going to bring new sponsors, new stuff to the sport as you do in Martinsville? And the realistic answer is no. NASCAR was there. There was a reason they had to leave. It wasn't necessarily that they had to. It was they had to. Does that mean they can't go back, have one race there? No, that's not what I'm saying. But you got to look at it realistically and also take that fan part of it aside and go, can this really work? Now, y'all mentioned it. This definitely opens some doors. There is no doubt about that. NASCAR is looking outside the box. The street race in Chicago, again, I'm not necessarily a fan of that. But as a one-time off deal, they can make it work. Daytona road course as well as Charlotte, they've made that work, and they've improved on it. They've figured some things out. So the process has improved. I'm sure they're finding quicker ways, smarter ways to do these things. So, yeah, those possibilities are all there. I actually am kind of in favor of the international, but I understand the cost with it, and I can't even say that Mexico or Canada are necessarily any cheaper. And I know right now, especially when it comes to Canada, we're dealing with the COVID issue real bad. So that one, again, unfortunately, is a time period off. I'm not even going to put a date on it. I do hope they return there. I think the return investment there was good. The cost wasn't as much as far as travel versus having to ship the cars on crates across the ocean. So that is more doable, in my opinion. But I kind of would like to see a couple maybe in London or in Europe somewhere. I thought the Japan deal was great, but it ran its course, and whether they felt they didn't get the return on it like they wanted, they opted out of it, so you have to respect that. Again, we want NASCAR to survive, so as we mentioned, overextend yourself. Don't get in over your head. We saw that with the new tricks that popped up, the mile-and-a-half cookie cutters, as a lot of people like to call them, during the boom of the 90s. They overextended, and now they're in a little bit of a jam. So you got to keep that focus of be realistic, you know, and find that balance, but don't overextend yourself just because it's the current fad.
Okay, Brian, follow up.
Yeah, I think Jay kind of hit the nail on the head for my follow up there. Don't overextend yourself because it is the current fad. Like, there's no need to be like, all right, great, we're going to go do a couple of these internationally, or we're going to go do three or four stadium events a year. Like, part of what made that unique was that it was special, right? Like, if they go back to the Coliseum again next year, of course, all of us on the show, all of our listeners will probably tune in, because we'll tune in whether they race at Daytona or wherever. But, like, will it have that same spectacle? Will the same people come back? Will more people come back? I mean, honestly, I'd love to go cover it next year. You know, what will attendance look like? So I would like to see them do it again, I think, a second time there, just to see, you know, what can improve? Will it improve attendance? Will it improve viewership? You know, that'd be kind of neat. Or if they could somehow work that into, maybe they run that on a Wednesday night exhibition and then they run, you know, Auto Club on the weekend or something like that. Like, I think it just opens up a lot of different possibilities. So I like the fact that this was such a success that I think it'll be considered elsewhere. But again, I just don't want them to over jump the gun and be like, okay, we're going to start doing these everywhere. I don't think they will, but you never know. Sometimes when there's such a good thing in front of you, you just overextend yourself and go for so much of that good thing. So hopefully they temper that a little bit and kind of look at it rationally and figure out, okay, where can this work and how can we expand upon this? And also I'd love to see and hear more data of, okay, you know, I don't even know how you go about tracking that, but new fans that went yesterday or new fans that tuned in, will they tune in again? Will they watch Daytona? Will they still be watching mid-season when you get to some of those races? Will they watch the playoffs? Or was it, you know, I heard they gave away a bunch of tickets or discounted tickets to USC students to get them to come out. Will they come back, or was this just a fun, let's go drink and have a good time at the track, but not something we want to go do again? You know, it'd be interesting to kind of see how that ebbs and flows and what comes of it.
Yeah, to your point. Oh, well, Andy, I don't want to skip you. Go ahead, Andy. Your follow-up.
Yeah, you know, I just think that this is an event that I think was widely popular and I think may open some doors and for expansion or trying new venues, like I said earlier. So I hope that that's the direction that they go. It was nice to see NASCAR getting outside of tradition, if you will, something that I think a lot of fans have a tough time with sometimes, but you know, I've been a fan for 21 years now, and I greatly enjoyed the fact that it was something new. It was a new market. It was something different, and sometimes different is good. And this is a trend I would like to see in the future. And I think that this may be the start of possibly seeing NASCAR, you know, move in and try new directions. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So, you know, I'm not saying we have to revamp the schedule every single year and revamp all these racetracks. That's, you know, not something that needs to be done, I don't think. But it would be fun to see them try, you know, maybe an exhibition race here and there at some place new, and, you know, maybe see more of a diverse schedule in the future. You know, something we talked about last year was the possibility of, you know, maybe markets coming and going off the schedule. And I think that this type of opportunity allows them to do that and allows them to maybe go places that were previously not thought of. And I think that this is a good step in the right direction.
I totally agree. I think it's a good step in the right direction. Tony Stewart during the broadcast said, this is how you promote a race. And going back to our earlier conversation about growing pains and what we're learning from the process here, that's one of the things that I think they're learning is the way they promoted this was fantastic, and that's what they need to do at all the tracks. They need to, again, you don't want to lose that allure, but it's kind of like if you build it, they will come. If you promote it, they will come. And so as long as they find that out-of-the-box thinking to make it something new and exciting. And you know, Eddie Gossage was the best at this, creating some kind of drama about why you should be at that race. It is important to this whole process of the different venues, out-of-the-box thinking, and everything else. Got to look at. And it's the same with the sales technique. You got to find out what the need is and then fill that need. So that's what NASCAR needs to do, is they continue their out-of-the-box thinking about what's the next big thing that NASCAR can do is the promotion that goes along with that and giving fans a reason to be there. So that's all I'm really going to add to it. So, Jay, you get the final word here.
Well, hopefully it's his first night on Hot Topics. Hopefully I don't offend Brian, but I'm going to say with you talking, I heard Dave Moody and Larry McReynolds. They talk about too much of a good thing is a bad thing. And I like, y'all know I like Dave Moody. That doesn't mean I agree with him always. He wasn't in favor of Bristol for the Cup Series being a dirt race. He liked the fact that it belonged to the Truck Series. It was unique to them. He didn't want to see it come to the Cup Series. Now, I disagree with that. I thought one in the Cup Series, one in the Truck, you know, still separate different venues and whatnot. So I was okay with it. But I understand his point. You know, that was the Truck Series. So, yeah, you want to keep that uniqueness. I think we all agree on that, whether it be at this venue or possibly rotating others, if logistically it makes sense. The strategy, marketing strategy, it's got to come into play there. Like I said, I would like to see races at North Wilkesboro, but one of this capacity for that exhibition like that isn't going to be as productive there as I feel it was in L.A. or can be in some other places. I know New York is one that has been kicked up, the name or location. And I think that is a good place because that is to break that market. Whether we can get a racetrack and a race up there, don't know, but it at least gets the fans engaged one time. You get them, you hook them, they're going to watch the ones at the other places. So, you know, and I don't want to see them tear down the past or the heritage either. You know, again, I felt it sucked when we lost, sorry for that word, when we lost North Wilkesboro or even Chicagoland, which isn't even that old as far as our history, but was such a good track, you know, it comes about as part of the evolution, you know, to do something new and try a new market, you got to give up an old one. So finding that balance, and again, I think overall NASCAR does a great job. We've seen the evolution of them as far as we talked about trying something new the past several years. I mean, we've seen some tremendous change in what they're willing to try and allow on the table to even discuss. So that's a good thing. And I think the crew we have leading us is looking at that, okay, yeah, we know what fans want. We know what, you know, would be really cool to do, but technically it's just not going to work. We have to temper it in. So keeping that in check.
Okay, you guys all brought up some fantastic points of view here. But I think I'm going to go ahead and close it out and not move on. I think everybody had a chance to bring up a topic. Oh, did somebody have something more to say? Oh, okay. I thought
That was my dog. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Anyway,
he did have something to say.
There you go. What we do now, Brian, is a roundtable, and I'll start out with Sandy on this, so that he can, and we'll go to Jay and then you. As we go around the table and kind of do our sign-off with, you know, what we're working on, what fans can look for on the website or what tracks you're going to be going to and your Twitter handle or your social media handles and how they can follow you. So, Andy, we'll start with you and we'll go to Jay next.
Yeah, on Twitter, it's CB14Fan and certainly – really enjoyed this past weekend. Thought it was really good in a lot of ways and thankful to be on here tonight and also just really excited about Daytona. I think this is the last off weekend coming up for a while, so we're going to be busy in the coming weeks, but just really excited to see the season get underway.
Jay?
Yeah, I'm going to echo that. The excitement, I know now we have to wait that extra week, even with the Super Bowl in between. It's going to be tough to wait that extra week to Daytona, but getting excited about that as well as local racing here. For me, the dirt tracks are looking to kick off here mid-month. Hopefully the weather cooperates. Right now it's still a little chilly down here, and I say that, and I know you guys are going to counter with you're a lot colder than I am, so I won't go real in-depth there, but Magnolia Motor Speedway, home of the Black Ice, I think is looking to kick off on the 20-something, 27th, somewhere there towards the end of February with the sprint cars, the Jackson Motor Kart Speedway. I know their first night is supposed to be the 19th. And then your Capital City Raceway there at Jackson Motor Speedway. That will be March 5th for our season opener, hopefully, again, weather permitting. And I know that same weekend, Chris is going to be busy there at Why Not Motorsports Park, House of Hook, with the Battle of the States, the Mississippi Street Stock Series, highlighted there for street stock fans, if you like me. So getting ready. You know, we're right on that verge of race season. Once that gate opens, it's going to be a flood. And you can follow me when I am at those tracks, Michael Hoosman on Facebook and MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, Brian.
Good deal. First of all, thanks all three of you for having me back on as part of the show tonight. It was definitely a good time. I'm looking forward to being a part and contributing to the show throughout the season this year. I think it'll be a lot of fun, from hot topics to our various guests, to just breaking down the race previews and the race reviews. And as far as writing, I'm writing over at Auto Racing Digest. So you can follow them on Twitter, check out the site. We'll have stories up there, especially heading into Daytona. Probably a little quiet this week because there's not much going on, and then we'll ramp up for Daytona coming up. So looking forward to it. I think there's a lot to look forward to this season. I think it'll be interesting to see how the next-gen car plays out. And I think, you know, Xfinity and trucks never seem to disappoint with storylines either. So looking forward to a great 2022.
Okay. I'm going to do a quick promo for our guest tonight. We had a fantastic guest on, Tommy Mason. He's with MAV TV, but he also started the Spears TV and Low Budget TV out on the West Coast, and he told the story of how they got started with that, and it all started with a Christmas gift. So I would really encourage everybody to go back and listen to that guest segment. He was a lot of fun to talk to. We ran out of time, so I told him he's got to come back so we can talk some more with him. I feel like we just scratched the surface with the 15 minutes that we had with him tonight. But definitely look for that. We're in the process of putting together the guest schedule. I just got the first guest that came up here in my email, so watch for more news on that. And definitely looking forward to this 2022 season. I can't wait for Daytona. I love Daytona, and if I could go there every year, I would do it. You know, I've got to kind of pace myself here. So I'll be looking for some opportunity to go to Gateway this year. Looking forward to that race, and the fact that NASCAR is going to have all three series there, I think it's going to be fantastic. And kind of a different point of view for us, Brian, to be going to Gateway instead of Chicagoland. So I think that'll be fun as well. So watch for more news on that front. I always like to thank our listeners for taking the time to tune in, and our Fan for Racing crew for being the great guys that you are and doing such a great job that you do, both on the website and here on Fan for Racing Radio. I appreciate each and every one of you. So with that, I think we are ready to call it a night. Look for us to be back. Our next show back, by the way, is going to be a podcast. And if you guys want to mark calendar, that's Wednesday, February the 16th, for Jay and I to do the preview of all the racing at Daytona. We'll start at 11 a.m. Eastern and continue with our usual format for that podcast. And we'll have it out in time for the duels. And we'll probably do a little bit of a review of that ARCA East race at New Smyrna, which has taken place tonight before. So, again, a lot to look forward to, and we'll look forward to talking to everybody when we get to our preview show there on the 16th of February. So with that, I think we're ready to call it a night, guys.
All right. Have a good night.
Thanks, everybody.
Have a good night.
Good night, everybody.